Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, happy holidays. Welcome to another holiday edition of Sports Tonight, brought to you by, of course, by Bradford White Water Heaters of Ember, Pennsylvania, Princeton City Water Heater. Log on to bradfordwhite.com to the walk around Philadelphia legend who is in the cold part of New Jersey right now, Mr. Don Henderson, an Atlanta legend, a little warmer than New Jersey, Roger Henner. Gentlemen, welcome. And I got a bone to pick with the Tampa Bay market right now. I hear myself out. It's just so... It's going to be bad, guys. This one talk show host, I'm going to see him personally on Sunday, says how great the SEC is, this and that. Okay, Bama lost to Auburn, fine. Ohio State beat Michigan. who's still undefeated? Ohio State. Thank you very much. So I'm going to...
And how about those Seminoles, Tommy?
Oh, my God.
At Florida State. They're undefeated.
Right. Oh, my God. And this... Gentlemen, happy holidays, and I hope you're warm up in New Jersey, Don, and Roger, I hope you're toasty in Atlanta right now. It was 84 degrees down here, Don. I just got out of the pool about 2 hours ago, and I'm going Christmas shopping in shorts. Now, what's wrong with that question?
Well, he started talking about the Alabama game, which was one of the most unbelievable games I've ever seen.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Everybody that I've read and everybody that I've talked to, you know, that youth service, maybe Bill Mazeroski's home run and Bobby Thompson's home run and all the great plays in football, basketball, hockey, whatever it may be, that we've all seen, this game had to usurp all of those. It was just unbelievable. And to follow that with, Tommy, I agree with you. I don't think you could take an undefeated team, although I think Michigan, I think Ohio State's kind of a tough time with Michigan State this weekend.
Oh,
but
yes.
If they come through that game undefeated, there's no way you could take a team from another conference or anywhere and put him in the championship game. That's my feeling.
But Don, he was saying how bad the Big Ten is. I mean, sure, he's an LSU alumni, yeah, but the Big Ten, for over 100 years, kids went to school there. They had great quality products up there. The SEC just got great the last 10 years, but the Big Ten's been there for over 100 years of great football right now. And those kids, you know, the late Joe Paterno made those kids go to school every day, take their lessons, and Woody Hayes would do this. Would do the same thing. Bo Schimmelk would do the same thing, and Hayden Fry out of Iowa would make these kids go to school, get an education.
Well, we'll see what Roger has to say, but I would only say to you in that regard, Tommy, that, you know, it's not what happened yesterday; it's what's happening right now. And the Big Ten is, for the most part, been down all year. Second,
I know.
Every time the Big Ten went out to play the Pac-10 in the, you know, in the Rose Bowl, they didn't come up too strong, even. Even in the old days, when Ohio State went out there. So, you know, talking about the best conferences doesn't really mean very much. It's the team, and I think Ohio State is the one that deserves to go. Roger, what do you think?
Oh, I agree with you, Don. And, you know, you had me thinking about some of the great experiences that we have lived through where we either were able to listen to it, watch it, or attend it. The Johnny Most Havlicek stole the ball.
Right.
That ended, you know, that allowed the Celtics to continue their long scheme, didn't it? You know, it's with championships, and they beat, well, I guess, was that the Sixers. It wasn't the Warriors.
No, that was the Sixers.
It was the Sixers, yeah. And everybody, you know, that was a Sixers fan will always, that'll live in infamy. But, you know, living around here as we do, and, you know, all of us in the Southeast Conference area, I think there's a lot to be said. I happen to be a big Ten fan, and always have been. Not because, you know, Penn State's only been in the Big Ten relatively recently. And
right.
But I'll tell you what, that game on Saturday night was unbelievable. And I think if you look at, you know, Georgia's had a down year, but they're still a pretty good team, and Barnes really had a down year. But I think you got to give a lot of credit to Jimbo Elliott at Florida State. Jimbo Fisher, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You know,
like to change gears. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
sorry,
you got to give him a lot of credit.
I'd like to change gears real quick. I'd like to welcome a friend of mine who does a great job of scouting for the Chicago Cubs. I had an honor to play with him the other day, golf. Tim Walker. We're talking to our Philadelphia legend, Don Henderson, who did a lot of job with the Philadelphia Phillies. He had the pre- and post-game show, Roger Hender in Atlanta. Tim, and welcome to the program, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, Don, Roger, Tommy, and Frank, and a pleasure to be on this evening.
Well, Tim, we got the perfect day to get you on because
yes.
lot of changes were – A lot of changes made over the last 48 hours, especially the two with the Yankees. The Astros were in the punch. The Cubs were in the punch. So there's been a lot of movement in baseball and still a lot to come. So give us your idea of what's happened so far.
Phillies also,
well,
Don.
Yeah, Phillies too.
Yes, the Phillies been very active with their deals with one with Toronto there and a couple others earlier. But it's been quite about as active as I've ever seen prior to the winter meetings, which are coming up this Sunday in Orlando. And I've never seen this kind of surge like we've had. And I still think there's a fair amount of things to be done starting in the winter meetings, which starts on Sunday all the way through Thursday. So it could be getting wild and woolly.
Well, how about with the Rays? They got Heath Bell, reliever. They got that catcher from Cincinnati. I know the Cubs faced Cincinnati several times up there. Tell us what you think about that catcher the Rays got from Cincinnati. I think
Mr. Hannigan, who they've had there for about 5-6 years, was an undrafted player out of Rollins in Winter Park, Florida, and pretty good catch and throw guy, and very unsung type of player that worked his way through the Red system, and real good catch and throw guy, and hopefully it gives the pitching staff of the Rays some stability. I'm sure he'll work along with Hickey pretty well, the pitching coach, and it'll be interesting to see what Hickey can do with Bell here this coming year. I know Bell had a little bit of a speed bump last year, but there were some decent parts to Bell's season, probably more toward the second half. But it'll be they seem to look like pretty good acquisitions, and Hannigan looks like could be a guy if healthy to really stabilize that pitching staff.
Only 27 years old.
Go ahead, Roger. No, I just, you know, there's been a number of Japanese, a number of Cuban players signed in recent years. And, of course, the Phillies signed this pitcher, and the Dodgers have, their right fielder. Tell us a little bit about how that process works for these international types.
Well, I think especially with those, and there's a rule in baseball, anyone that's 23 years old or older doesn't fall within the agreement with the players union and the clubs. With most of the draft today and the international part up until they're 23 is basically controlled by Major League Baseball. So the only other entity where a club can kind of improve themselves somewhat quickly is through the international part, where you get the Cubanos and the Asians, mainly the guys from Japan and Taiwan and Korea that are over 23 years old. That's an avenue for a club to get a little bit better, a little quicker, because the other avenues now have been kind of shut down with the restructuring of the draft here a couple of years ago with the players' agreement.
Well, Tim, how about your club, the Chicago Cubs? Every year I hope the Cubs to get in that playoffs, to get in the World Series. I'm a Cub fan. Like I told you, we're playing golf. Hopefully they have a great year. What's your expectations in the of your Cubs this year?
Well, Tommy, I think it's been quite a process here the last two or three years after the Theo Epstein had come over from Boston, and it's kind of restructuring of the organization, and it's been a little bit of a grinder, but I think we have some young talent that's coming along. You know, we have a new manager in Rich Renteria. I think things are slowly going to get better here, and I think there's good things ahead. It's going to be a hell of a balancing act with all these young players that are in line to come up with our major league club in the next couple of years. So it's, we're working hard every day and trying to put together something to hopefully make you smile and millions of Cubs fans.
Well,
I'm
it's
hoping.
Interesting because the New York Mets are in the same position, and big article in the New York Post today that, you know, they think they ought to sign Granderson just to give the fans and the ticket season ticket buyers a chance to say, well, we got one player that's a legitimate major league player that may help the team offensively. And the Cubs are in the same position. They've got to wait for these youngsters to come along, but they also have to put a team on the field in 2014.
Oh, yes. And I think with the new agreement, it's a little tougher to turn your club around today. And hopefully for the Mets and definitely for the Cubs, that we can turn this around sooner than later. But there is a little bit of a kind of a learning curve, or it's just going to take a little bit longer with clubs that were sub 500 to turn their clubs around. It's not like in years past, the free agent pool isn't as big as it used to be. It's tough to turn around with the draft, but, you know, no excuses to be made. We need to get better, and I'm sure the Mets feel that way too.
Wait, Tim, how about the Cubs fans out there, Cubs Nation, the WGN? It's a great – I was at Wrigley Field one time in my life. It's such a great atmosphere when you go there as a fan to watch the Cubs play and also on TV. And it's just a great baseball tradition in Chicago on a summer day, day or night at Wrigley. It's one of the best parks in the world.
It's a great environment. People naturally are yearning for a winner. I mean, we had three division winners in the last 10 years, but there have been some hard times. We got a little bit older and had to retool. And hopefully there's some good things on the way and something to where we can get a little stability and be a pretty good club for a 10-year period or more, such as the Atlanta Braves have done in the past and some of those more consistent clubs. So I think hopefully with Theo Epstein coming over, it gives us a little bit more a chance to be stable with our organization. Our owner, Tom Ricketts, has been very supportive. And we got a lot of new projects going on. We got a new spring training site that's opening next March or latter part of February. Our site in the Dominican Republic is brand new. It just opened up last May. And a lot of additions and improvements to be made at Wrigley here in the next few years. So it could be real exciting times, and I'm really looking forward to be a part of it.
You know, the story that I like, and Don knows more about this than I do believe Ned Coletti, the Dodgers general manager, was the PR director for the Cubs at one time. And as I recall, wasn't he with the Philadelphia Journal guys?
Yes, exactly right. He was the Philadelphia Journal prior to going out to L.A.
Yeah, and he went with the Cubs with Dallas Green, I think, first, and then he went, and all of a sudden he winds up as a general manager with the Dodgers and has done a great job. I just wonder, too, if the Cubs had wished they had kept him as their PR director and then made him a general manager.
Well, first of all, it's a great country. And second of all, it's, good things can happen, I guess, to the people that stay consistent. it's just kind of amazing, you know, some...
The route that Ned took, right?
Excuse me?
The route that Ned Coletti took.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But you guys, I remember the Philadelphia Journal. I used to love Page 9. You remember Page 9 had the Girl of the Week in there?
Oh, yeah. Dear fellow do, right, Don?
Well, you know, I always read the news and the sports. I don't remember anything like that.
I remember that page 9.
That wasn't on the sports page.
Page 9 or 12. Tim, what are you doing in the off season to prepare yourself for the season? Do you have a list that you have to go out a certain date to look at, scout some players right now, or you have to go to the winter meetings to see what the top brass are saying right now?
Well, we'll get together, our organization. We've got a fair amount of people coming down from Chicago, and I'll meet them over in Orlando on Sunday, and we'll go over some of the options and possibilities that we might have for trades. It's a pretty busy time there in Orlando, and then we go on into the new year and I start looking at some amateurs, I'm responsible for seeing all of our major league club and our minor league club and kind of helping in setting up the 40-man roster. And pretty active in the international market, going to the Dominican Republic quite a few times. And it's got a great variety to it and keeps me young, I hope.
Well, you mentioned the Dominican Republic. And you know, how many scouts do you have in those particular areas, and how many scouts do you have in the United States?
Well, we have I'll try to go with it in the United States. We have probably 16 area guys. We have 4 regional guys, 2 national guys, and our scouting director, Jason McLeod and myself, kind of run between that part and our player development. And then we also run down to Latin America where we have 3 or 4 kind of regional guys in the Dominican, and one guy, Jose Zera, who runs our Dominican part, and we have one full-time guy in Venezuela, and then we have a couple other part-time guys also in Panama. We have a guy that runs all of our international department named Louis O'Hala, who was with Theo over in Boston, so hopefully good things can happen here. And Paul Weaver's his assistant, Paul, was with Houston for many years and came over to Chicago here about 4 or 5 years ago.
I'll tell you, Tim, a friend of mine, good friend of mine I was in the Navy with, he's retired from government civil service. He's coaching high school baseball up in Northern Virginia. He is the number one Cubs fan in Virginia. He's got it on his license plate. He's to the Fantasy Week, you know, and told me all about that. So his name is Randy Lytle. So, you know, I can get you his name because he may have some players up there from Northern Virginia. It may be nuggets out there that nobody knows about.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's Virginia's a pretty good hotbed for amateur baseball and has shown well in the draft here in the last 20 years, and kind of like some of the football players they have over in those areas that have been productive. It's a very good athletic state, and it's something that we visit Virginia quite a bit through the years.
Tim, I'd like to welcome you. I'd like to, when you get back from the winter meetings, I will call you to play some golf. And now, thank you so much for coming on, Tim. We'll have to get you on before you get busy in January. It's a little you know, update for the Cubs up there. It is always a pleasure. We'll have to play golf when you come back from Orlando. It'll be probably last time for you because you'll be busy first of the year, Tim. So,
Thanks. Tommy, thank you very much. And Don and Roger and Frank, it's a pleasure to talk with you, and hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Good luck to you. I hope you come up strong. Happy holidays.
Well, thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Our next guest is a good friend of mine. It wasn't for Mr. Tim Taylor. He used to play for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now was the St. Louis Blues. Tim, tell Don and Roger and Frank what you did in Winter Haven in 2004. You threw an honorary first pitch out there. Tim, welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks, Tony. I don't know if it was honorary first pitch, but it was a pitch. And it was fortunate enough, I grew up loving the Toronto Blue Jays, so it worked out perfect for me. And for our team, it was actually great good luck because we went on to win the Stanley Cup that year.
Did you throw the pitch from the mound, or did you cheat like the rest of them? Go up 20
feet
from home plate.
I'm a true Canadian. I grew up playing baseball. I actually all the way to midget. I played center field for our team, and I actually love baseball. It's a very intriguing game. It's a very thinking man's game, I think. So I actually really like the game and a big fan of it.
Tim, how about Marty's night the other night? 1,000 NHL games. It's great to see you and Mo there, and Richie is on the other side. Tell everybody, you know, how it is to play. And it's, you know, the 1,000 games in the National Hockey League, also winning 2 cups like you. It also winning 2 Stanley Cups like you did.
Well, Tommy, it was a great tribute to Marty. Not only just because he played on 1,000 games, but he played pretty much almost his whole 1,000 games with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And for what he's done in his career, he exemplifies what you want in a player. And me working on the other side as management now, I look for players like that. I look for the Marty St. Louis because he's a diamond in the rough and a guy that went undrafted, really signed as a free agent twice, once by Calgary Flames. It didn't work out, that they didn't know the type of player they had, and another by Tampa Bay Lightning. And even with that, you know, Ludzik was a coach when Marty signed with him. It took John Tortorella, a second coach with his second team, to kind of figure out what type of player Marty was going to be and what he's going to become. So that was, a great tribute to Marty to accomplish what he's done. Not only just because it's 1,000 games, but you look at the guys who have played 1,000 games and where he's at, a level play right now. He's at the top of his game. Freddie Modine and I talked about that. Most guys, 1,000 games, they're on the downswing of their career, and you honor them because 1,000 games is pretty remarkable. You know, again, you go in 1,000 games, there's only 280-some or 290 guys in history of the National Hockey League have played 290 games or 1,000 games, which is pretty incredible. You know, you have 700 guys play per year. The league is almost, I don't know, close to 90 years old, and to have only 290 guys accomplish 1,000 games is pretty incredible. But for Marty and to be where he's at for 1,000 games, he's at the top of his career still. He's a guy now that leads the Lightning, not only on the ice but off the ice. He exemplifies, and I say that word again, it's probably redundant, but what you want in your organization. And for us with the St. Louis Blues, we'd love to have a guy like Martin St. Louis because he's a guy that really, he's the heart and soul. When you talk about heart and soul, he really is the heart and soul. He's that guy that you see, you just want him to do well. He just works so hard. He's on the puck. He makes his teammates better. He's the one that, you know, when Steven Stamkos his first year, he grabs Steven and takes him by his side. And obviously, Steven Stamkos is a very good player, and everyone thought he'd be a great player in this league. But Marty was instrumental in getting his career started. So, you know, he's a guy I'll tell you how valuable he is to his team and what type of a guy he is. I flew in. Freddie Modine flew in. Dave Vaynerchuk was there. All the guys that played and won Stanley Cups with him wanted to be there for him. And guys that couldn't, like Brad, it worked out great because Brad was there. His dad was there because it was a New York Rangers weekend with the dad. So it worked out incredibly well. And I'm so proud of Marty. And be a part of that night was special.
But Tim, your line was there because Marty was on Richie's line and Moe's line, and then you had the third line, Andy and then Chris Stigmas. All the two or the three lines were all intact. So and Vinny was coming in on Wednesday night, so we had everybody for the homecoming.
Yeah, we did. And you know what? I missed Phil Kuba was there as well, and Stan Natchkash was there. So
right.
It was a good night. It was a real good night. And I believe his parents couldn't have been more prouder that night of him because, you know, everything that Marty is was really brought to the forefront that night. And it was nice to see his boys. His wife, Heather, was instrumental in making sure that Freddie Modine and I got there. And so it was a great night and really to honor a great person in the community.
The Lightning, yeah, what great response they've gotten, in the last 8 or 9 years. And last year, even when they slumped a little bit, the crowd was still there. And you're in a great city in St. Louis. Boy,
yes.
You're talking about one of the great sports cities in the country. But one of your dear old friends went to Madison Square Garden the other night. Tort got quite a reception, Tommy. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. Tort, he really gets that reception everywhere he goes, doesn't he? He really leaves his mark. So
he gets the headlines. There's no doubt about it.
I bet it might have been a history maker, though, on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, I remember one time at Brandon, it was Chief and Rick were in there right there. I had to set me up. You know, I did all the sound for, you know, website. I still do the same thing for the Bill Wickett up there. So I said the Torts, you know, after things, what do you got for me, Tommy? It's a couple of things. And he starts saying, you blankety, blank, blank, blank. And when I was shaking like that, and Chief and Rick were saying, get back here, Tommy. It's all you're joking. I was so shaken up there in that. But I used to love when he used to ask Kevin O'Connell, right? You know how the courts go in a separate room up there away from the room up there. He used to say, Kevin O'Connell, hey, what's the matter? John Gruden not speaking today?
Well, you know what? The one thing, fellas, that I have to tell you about John Tortorella is that Torts, as a scary, as intimidating man he is, as a coach, he was very upfront. And you know, Freddie Modine, myself, Marty, and Brad go in these golf tournaments throughout the year. And this year, actually, we're going over to Europe, so we're pretty excited to see each other at Marty's thing to talk about more about it. But, you know, we talked about it last year. Who the most instrumental coach or who's made the biggest influence on your career? And every one of those guys said John Tortorella, every one of them. And, you know, we've all had the battles with him because as a coach you have those battles. But he's a guy that really has stood up for his players, and the players have that respect for him. And you know, I'm 100% sure if we did not have John Tortorella as our coach, we would not have won the Stanley Cup. He was that influential on our team, and he meant that much to our team. And you know, he's just a guy, and to go on with that is how he is in the community. I don't think a lot of people realize what John Tortorella does to charity events. He does it silently. He doesn't promote it at all, and not a lot of people know about what he does. But he does a ton of work for charity, and he has been unbelievable with that. And if there's any one day that I could just say thank you to him, and for his work that he's done behind the scenes, and I would love to do that because he is a kind gentleman, and I don't think a lot of people recognize that because they see that persona that he portrays that you know, with the media and stuff. But a lot of that to take the pressure off players, and really people get on him for it. But he does an incredible job of relieving pressure off players that aren't playing well or things aren't going well. He did extremely well during a playoff run. But I hope people realize what type of man he is. He's a very kind-hearted man and gives back to the community.
Well, you remember, Tim, he used to do that fishing tournament, I think 2004, 2005, and 6. And he was, and I said that he's in the office one day. I said, John, you want me to get you on the show, talk about it? And he said, no, I'm just going to keep it quiet, just to keep it quiet like that. And I still
remember. You know why? You know why, Tommy? I'll cut you off. Just because it's never about John Tortorella. It was always about other people. He did it not for himself.
Okay.
He did it for other people. He did it for them.
Okay.
That's why he didn't want any recognition. And there was, I can't remember the exact story, but he actually flew back to New York. There's a little girl that is dying of cancer. He flew back to New York to be at one of her events. You know, it was a spaghetti dinner or something like that, or bowling or something like that. He flew back and was there for her. He surprised her with no one else knowing. He didn't let the media know. He doesn't want that. And that's the one thing that I respect most about him. It's never really about him. It's always about other people.
Wow, because I still remember 2004 was sitting in Winter Haven. And remember we come back, we got a couple of the sodas up there, and I said, what did I tell you? It's going to be our year. And by George, I should have went to Vegas that year.
I mean, you should have. I don't think anyone expected it, but our team was so good. We went first in the conference. People forget that. They think that we won by surprise, but we were first in the conference all year. Mm-hmm. We go into Detroit with 4 or 5 games left in the season, and we've outplayed them badly. We outshoot them badly.
Right.
And, you know, we tie them 1-1 or 2-2 maybe. But it was a game that really, for our players, that let them know that there was a chance to win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And we battle against Detroit in their building. And Detroit goes on and wins the President's Trophy. But we were only 3 or 4 points off it. But still, we're conference champions. So it wasn't a fluke. Our players were good players, and our team was a very good team.
Well, the interesting part of that was that there's two things involved. One, you have to have a good coach. But number two, and maybe as important or more, you better have a goaltender.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, Happy Bowen played very, very well. There's only, I mean, probably 2 games where he'd like those back, but at the same time, we really protected him too. We played very strong defensively. You take the unsung heroes like Jason Cullimore, Stan Nekash, you know, Ben Clymer. Our fourth line was awesome. Ben Clymer, Martin Seaback, and Chris Dingman played unbelievable in Game 6 and 7. They were tremendous for us. Took a lot of pressure off. You know, we had some unsung heroes that really played very, very well, stepped up their game. And of course, you can't win without your star players. That's the given, right? You have to have your star players have to be the star players, and ours were. But really, our unsung heroes really stepped up and played a huge role for us too.
Tim, what are you doing out in St. Louis? Tell everybody what you're doing out there.
Well, my job now at St. Louis, Tommy, is I'm director of player development. So ultimately what I do is as I travel around and every guy that's drafted by our organization I'm involved with and more so as a mentor, trying to keep in constant contact, trying to go to all their games, evaluate them, see where they are with the organization, and trying to promote them and get them to the NHL as quickly as possible. As you know, the CBA now has, as it is, you know, you have to be successful, you have to have your young players make it to the NHL as quickly as possible and keep that salary cap down. That salary cap is a big number, but it's the number that dictates how you're going to play throughout the season. If you have your young players, they're underpaid and overachieved, then you have a chance for success. And right now, we've got a very young team, and we're playing extremely well. So I feel very confident with our team, and I like our team right now. They're going in the right direction. And obviously, Doug Armstrong has done a great job. Ken Hitchcock has done an unbelievable job as coming in as coach. So our team is heading the right direction. And obviously, in the Western Conference, it's a very big conference, very tough conference, and we're one of those teams, and so we have a chance.
Of us grew up in Philadelphia, and the Blues were the main competition when those six expansion clubs came on the scene in 67. And it was the Blues Flyers.
Scotty Bowman did an incredible job, too. I mean, you talk about Hall of Fame coaches. That's where he was with the Blues. And the Blues have been in the finals twice and haven't won a game. They've been shut out both times. But at the same time, you know, expansion teams never get to the finals. So it's for what Scotty Bowman did to the St. Louis Blues and put them on the map. And, again, you go back to what a great city and sports city that is. St. Louis is unbelievable. You know, from a hockey, from baseball, their team has been spectacular over the years. So it's been a great situation for our team. Unfortunately, the Cardinals are so good that they take away some of the fan support. But you know what? Winning breeds, you know, competition, healthy competition. And I'm hoping that our team can go back and forth with the Cardinals with a healthy competition and bring some championships back to St. Louis.
Well, Tim, I'm going to make a prediction right now that your St. Louis Blues will be in the Stanley Cup Finals right now at West. That's my prediction.
Well, I hope so, Tommy. If you make that prediction, I don't think there's anyone in the East that can beat the West right now. So that ultimately tells us that we can win the Stanley Cup. But you know, it's just it's such a, as you know, it's a long season, and it takes a lot of luck has to be on your side too. It's all about matchups. So you know,
but
hopefully
how
we can
about
continue.
The way Tommy jumped off Tampa Bay right away? How about this?
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, you talk about a guy jumping ship. Unbelievable.
His employer.
Oh, I said in the West. I said in the West, guys. Tim knows it in the West.
No. You said Stanley Cup if they were going to win it all.
I said the West. Uh-oh, I can hear the phone be ringing tomorrow in my office tomorrow. Tim, I can just see it right now.
Well, Tommy, I'll tell you what. If the Lightning say right now they're going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, I'll take that right now any day. I mean, they're in the long haul. They've got a really good young team, and Stevie Y has done a great job, an ex-teammate of mine. So he's done a really good job with them, and obviously Marty as being the leader. You know, they have a big injury right now with Steven Stamkos down. So if they can get by that and get, you know, stay within reach or right up in the with the top teams, they have a chance. So you know, it's they are a good team. I you know, watching them play the other night, I love the players they have, and they've put together a good nucleus. And obviously, goaltending is huge, like you said before. And now with Ben Bishop, I know Ben pretty well because my first year in St. Louis, he was our goalie in the AHL in Peoria, and he was a AHL MVP in the All-Star game. So he's a guy that we respect in St. Louis. We know a little bit about. So now they have their goalie, and it's been a long time coming, but now they have the backup is very good too. So they have a great tandem there in Tampa. So now you build out from that. You have a good leader in Marty. You have a Stamkos, and then you have Hedman back on the defense. So they've got a great team. They're heading the right direction.
Tim, always a pleasure. So next time you're in Tampa, we'll get together for some golf. You know, Tampa Bay Golf will get you up there and that. So can we get you on Dirty Olympic break? We'll talk some more hockey then, Tim, with your team.
Absolutely, Tommy. You have my number. You give me a call anytime.
Sir.
I'd be happy to get on with.
Always great to have number 27 in my heart, Tim. You know that. God bless you. And have a very happy holiday season and happy New Year to you, Tim. We'll talk to you during
the
Olympic break.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Happy New Year.
Happy
holidays.
Take care. It was a real pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Tommy, Frank, and Don, I have a quick question. I think there's starting to be a little bit of a change in the Flyers and the Comcast Spectacor organization.
Uh-oh.
Right, Don?
Not a little change, a big change.
Big
25 years at the helm, and yesterday said that he was going to step down, and Davis took over, right?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Well, Jen, I'd like to welcome to the program another good friend of the program. Had him out golfing the other day. I'm trying to make a golf out of Mr. Coach Samuels. Lawrence, welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Are you still? Did you do what I said? You go back to the hit that nice and level swing. You come up, push, and you come right through the ball, right?
Yeah, I got a little practice here the other day. And I just hope you don't jump teams in arena football, man.
No, I won't.
Let me tell you something, Coach. Don't listen to him because the man he'll jump faster than a red flag. If he were representing the officials, they would be the best officials in all of sport.
Watch that go in the office tomorrow, Lawrence. Here's Bill walking by my own, walking while my door. What'd you say in your show? It's out west.
Yeah, you may be on your way to St. Louis.
Hey, Timmy, need some help?
I didn't know if I was on the right show. I mean, there was a light that came out of his mouth. I was like, wait a minute, man. You guys are seeing that, guys.
I said out west up there, guys.
No,
Lawrence,
no. Don't try to jump out now.
Lawrence, what do you think of, Coach Tomlin with the Steelers, $100,000 fine, and the team may lose some draft picks?
Wow.
Because he was
Roger, we have a soundbite
spot
from his press announcement.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
the one thing is that I don't have to worry about that in arena football. I'm already on the sidelines, and I'm already in the way. So
that's right.
I have no problem with jumping in the way in arena football. There's no rules against that if the guy's running my way. I'm trying to run out of the way.
He had a rather lengthy reply today, and I guess most of you saw it. It was in the New York Post here. And I can understand, having watched the game, he was watching the scoreboard, and so many people do watch the scoreboard. And he was watching the scoreboard, and in fairness, he said, "Look, I'll take any penalty they give me. I'm wrong. It was a disqualification, and there's nothing I can say to defend what happened." He said, "All I can do is tell you what really happened in my mind. I didn't do it intentionally. I was watching the scoreboard, and I didn't know that he was right there until he was right next to me."
All right.
Officials going to be reprimanded too, because that should have been a 15-yard penalty.
Well, they got more officials. They got more officials getting reprimanded this week than they ever had in the history of sport.
Oh no!
It's awful. It's unbelievable.
Look what happened to Washington Monday night,
Tommy.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a bad mistake. That was. I watched the game and the Washington game, and it was that was horrible.
There's no way, Coach, that you can support that. I mean, there's no way that the league can support it. Anybody can support that. That was wrong.
Yep. That was wrong. That was bad. But, and one thing, you take Mike Tomlin's apology. He took ownership of his mistake. And, I think the fine was probably appropriate for, what they've been finding guys and other things that happened in the league in the past. And he took ownership, and I guess we all have to now move on. It happens.
Well, the big thing is that they may dock them some draft picks, or at least one, and they said they're going to wait to see how the season ends and then decide what draft pick they're going to take. That's what hurts more than anything.
That would hurt more than anything.
Right.
Yeah,
the other thing they said, Roger, he said himself, was that every time he's discussed now, that's going to be the focal point of his career. They're always going to come back to it and say, well, he was on the field. You know, it's going to be like what happened at Ohio State a number of years ago.
Woody Hayes.
Yeah, with Woody. And he said in the paper today, it's going to always define some of the things. Every time they talk about him, this is going to come up. And Coach, I sort of agree with you. I, You know, and he paid his dues. He took full responsibility for what happened. It should be over.
Yeah, it should be over because, you know, he's a Super Bowl winning coach. It's sad that that's one of the things that, you know, one of the first things that will be talked about, you know, with his great career that he's had.
They also have just put him on the competition committee. And, you know, they're the ones that really write the rules and then get the approval. And, you know, that doesn't look too good for him having just gone on that committee and he knows the rules.
Oh, boy. Lawrence, how's everything going in the Storm office? Hopefully you get some good players for this upcoming year. I'm looking forward to it once again, as we said on Saturday. I can't wait for it. I wish it was here right now.
Oh, it's going great. Actually, we just followed up today with all the coaches were in the offices, and we're planning. We're getting ready for the season and very excited. You know, we have a couple other things on the board that we have to actually get through, but at this point of the year and this point of the season upcoming, I think we're ahead of schedule. The guys have been working very hard in the office, Chris Hovan, Coach K, and Doug Miller, and we've been working very diligently planning and getting our playbooks in order so when the guys come in, we can actually start and actually get ready to go this upcoming season. Hello?
Dave, let me ask you this. How did that open tryout down there in Tampa at the Forum, how did that work out? Did you sign some good potential players?
Yes, we have some good potential players on out of that camp. For one, I can tell you now, we're actually going to sit down and talk to one of the local quarterbacks in this area. You may have heard of him, Stephen Garcia.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. South Carolina, right?
Right. He'll probably come in and talk to us tomorrow, and we'll see where he stands and where he stacks up on our board. Maybe he can, help us out, So, like I said, the tryout was great. We had a good turnout. I think we're going to have another tryout coming on the 16th. I know we will have one on the 16th of February, and that'll be right before our training camp. So we will have some spots open to actually come to training camp. So we're looking for a big turnout on the 16th of February.
Is McPherson still on the front page?
Yes, McPherson's still with us. I think we have the nucleus still intact with our club, and I'm looking for big things, and it's going to be a very exciting season.
Lawrence, how can the players, how can the people try out for your camp on the 16th? Is that up on the website already, or would that be up the first of the year?
It should be up around the first of the year.
Good. We get you on every week. We have you talking about that every week. So, Lawrence, always a pleasure, sir, for that update for the Storm. I'll see you in the office tomorrow. Get my coffee around 10:30 back in that wonderful break room we have. So.
All right.
Lawrence, thanks for coming on, sir.
I'll be sure I meet you there at 10:30 then, bud.
just remember,
Lawrence, we have to go tee it up before we get busy. Then, okay?
Oh yeah, we got to tee it up. But also, one thing is that we want to get started getting our fans fired up and getting them to get those season tickets and coming in. And we have the Tampa Bay have the Forum rocking this year because I'm very excited. It's family fun, affordable tickets. You can't beat it. Like I said, you can't beat it. My family actually loves it. Everybody I invited to the game, they love it. I'm just ready to get it going.
And we're going to win a championship. We're going to win the championship and celebrate with a ring on your finger. We'll be playing golf at Tampa Bay Golf. We'll be 90-plus people. We're going to celebrate that championship, Lawrence. I guarantee you that, sir.
I just renewed my 10 tickets this afternoon.
There we go.
All right.
There we go, Lawrence. We're all
Brock's
set.
Right on the spot, I'll tell you. That's great.
Let me just say one thing. Frank, you've always been a loyalist. And if you say something, you're going to buy 10 tickets. Tommy throws the red flag in all the time. But you, I'm only allowed to have five. You dominate this show because you take care of everything. And the only thing we get from Tommy is, well, I got that number back in my house.
Well, you're out of my seats anytime, Don. They're right down on the field level.
And be sure to tell the coach you paid for your tickets, Tommy.
I don't pay for my tickets. How about you, Tom?
Do they get free meals there too for Tommy?
Well, yeah, they do.
We have a lot of conversation. The coffee thing tomorrow, Lawrence. I tell you.
Frank, his favorite expression is another free one, Daddy.
If there weren't any sports teams, Tommy would never eat.
Lawrence, thanks for coming to talk about another guy with another good friend of ours coming on the show. He does a great job with the Tampa Bay Bucks. I'll join in for a complimentary lunch that's coming off the range. Roy Cummings, Roy, good evening. We're talking about sporting arenas food right now. All the meals we get.
You guys are having one heck of a good time here, man.
God's in high gear tonight, Roy.
You guys are on. You're on your game tonight for sure.
Oh my God.
Roy, this was a terrific weekend for football. You want to lead us through it? Your perspective?
My perspective?
Yeah. Well, you always have the inside scoops and always bring a lot of life to the program.
Well, it's hard to bring any more life to it than it's already got right now. But I'll tell you what, you know, it was arguably one of the best weekends of college football ever.
Right.
Because you had obviously a mammoth upset with Auburn over Alabama. I cover the Bucs. I don't cover college football. But, you know, one of the great things I get to do on a Saturday when I'm on the road is if I get into the town in time, I get to sit there and watch some football games all day. And, you know, because I don't have a honey-do list to work on or anything like that. can't mow the lawn or do the yard work because I'm not there. So I was able to sit there and watch those games. And, I saw a little bit of Ohio State and Michigan, which was, again, an outstanding game. Florida State did to Florida what we expected. But, the Missouri game was another big one. And, Texas A&M. I mean, they're just great games. And then, look, guys, I'm sure you've probably talked about it already, but if you haven't, look, I don't think there's ever been a better finish to a college football game than what we saw in the Auburn-Alabama game last week.
Absolutely.
I understand the Stanford-Cal game probably ranks up there as number one for anybody looking for something really odd.
Yeah.
But if you're just looking from a pure football perspective where you don't have, bandmates running on the field, that one tops, to me, it tops the Flutie Hail Mary pass against Miami for Boston College. It really does. I mean, nobody expected that. Some people probably expected the kicker to make the field goal. He had the leg for it, but he misses. And then you don't expect a guy to bring it back 108 yards, or was it 109?
Right.
You know, it was just remarkable. And I'll tell you what, if you can find it anywhere, the call by the Auburn radio guys was just—it's one for the ages. It's it's pure emotion, and it's great stuff. It's really, you know what, guys, that game and that moment reminded me, and it sure reminded all of us, this is why we watch and follow sports.
Yes.
For moments like that, to be in, just to say you were watching it is something that people will probably remember for years. You know, everybody's got those moments in sports where they say, you know, this was a signature moment in my life because of this, that, this team I follow. But even if you don't follow one of those teams and aren't a fan of them, you're gonna want to say, hey, I remember where I was when that happened.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Roy, that if we'd been talking at any other weekend, first of all, the game between Michigan and Ohio State would have been one thing. The decision to go for two would have been another. Everybody would have been more than happy to discuss whether the coach was right or wrong. but by what happened with Auburn and Alabama, people completely lost track of Michigan and Ohio State, which was a great game.
Absolutely great point. Absolutely great point, Don. You nailed it. Yeah, that I'll tell you what, that saves a lot of angst, you know, coming Michigan's way. Because, I mean, what the heck, you know, you're right. It just becomes a footnote. And, and that is it's a great question to ask, you know, I mean, should they have gone for two? Should they have just kicked the field? I mean, personally, I give credit to a coach that decides, hey, you know what, we got a chance to win this football game. I'm going to go win this football game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going up against the best team, you know, arguably the best team in the conference. It's not going to make a difference for Michigan, really, in how their season falls. You know, it's all about beating Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a year when that's what it comes down to for Michigan. It's, you know, if we beat Ohio State, we made our season. If we don't, you know what, why not go for it? And they just didn't execute it, and it's a tough ending for them. But you're right. The people who were, you know, wanting to give a lot of grief to Michigan, they were all steered towards the Auburn-Alabama finish because it was so much greater.
Well, the other thing was that when the game was over in the press conference, he said, you know, to all the sports writers and everybody that was watching, there was no way we could have won that game in overtime. He said, our defense was spent. There was no way we were going to be able to stop them. And so it was either go for the 2 points here and win the game or concede that you're not going to win because you're going to have to play the overtime period and we couldn't have made it.
Right. And you know what, Don? That's another reason why I really respect the call, because there's a coach who absolutely knows that his team has given it for 60 minutes, everything it's got. They didn't leave anything on the field. They absolutely went toe-to-toe as best they could with you know, one of the best teams in the nation. And forget what, you know, at least record-wise, forget about who they've played and all that. But, I mean, they've certainly proven that they're one of the better teams in the nation. And they just didn't have anything left. And you're right. If you don't win it here, and good for them. You know, I appreciate the coach's honesty, and I don't think there's enough of it sometimes in this in sports anymore. And so I appreciate it. You know, everybody's worried about, you know, trying to hold coaches accountable for this, that, and the other. You know, at the end of the day, it's an entertainment thing. And you know what? It was tremendous entertainment that weekend.
Absolutely,
last weekend. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Great, good time.
You know, Ray, you just hit the nail on the head talking about, you know, when you remember a certain incident, and I know Don will remember this, because it's going for the 2 points, and it was a Temple-Penn State game a number of years ago.
Right.
I don't recall whether it was it Bruce Arians coaching then, Don, or was it Burt, Jerry Burt?
No, I think it was Jerry Burt.
Was it Burt?
Yeah.
And you remember Temple came way back against Penn State at the bet. And Burt went for the 2 points to win rather than the 1 point to kick the tie. And they didn't get the 2 points.
I'll tell you the funny thing about that, and Roy touched on it at the beginning about whether the miracle pass by Flutie would have been the top of all time to that point. I was doing a show at that time at 12:10, and I had Father Casey. Roy would not know Father Casey, but I had Father Casey on the air, you know, talking at the time. When he threw that pass, you should have heard Father Casey.
I've heard that story before, Don. No, I don't know Father Casey. Being a Lutheran, I wouldn't. But I know the story, which is it's one of the great storylines.
Mm.
And that's, you know, that's one of the things. Something will probably come out here, you know, over the next little while. You know, little stories like that. You know, about the whole Auburn-Alabama thing, and maybe even Michigan-Ohio State and some of the other games, you know, that someone somewhere, you know, did something different that made it an even more special moment. So, again, it's just one of those things that's really special about the game.
Well, Roy, I was on a golf course in Ohio State's beat Michigan, player Coach Samuels and Coach Tom Ryan and the PACC. So Ohio State's winning 35-21, and I'm going along real at a good clip par, you know, Tampa Bay golf par, a couple birds in there, right? Lawrence said, Michigan tied up the score. There goes the golf game.
Tommy, let me ask you serious question, Tommy.
Yes, sir.
Over there where you're playing golf, do they have lights at night over there?
Hey,
I've never heard you refer to anybody that you didn't just get finished playing on the golf course.
Guys, I can tell you this. They don't need to have lights. Tommy could go out there in the dead of night, midnight, it doesn't matter. No moon, full moon, doesn't make any difference. He doesn't need lights. He's got a sixth sense, guys. He knows where that hole is, how to drive it straight, how to putt the whole bit. There's you've never seen anything like the guy.
Oh, I have to show you my tour.
Who needs lights?
Roy, what do you think? What do you think the number one need for the Bucks is? You know, with free agents or the draft for next year.
I'll tell you what, guys, that's starting to change. Now, I don't think quarterback is a need. I think they've got their guy. I really like Mike Glennon. And the reason I say that is I'm sure I've said it on this show before, but if I haven't, I'll say it again real quick. He's got it from the neck up. He's got that intangible part of the game down. He's a student of the game. He's a very good student of the game. He's a smart kid. He gets that part. So I wouldn't worry about that. I think they've got a quarterback. They've proven that they might have, you know, six running backs on this team already. I don't think the defensive line is as bad as some people think. The receiving core, I think, needs some work. I'm starting to think, guys, that maybe the number one thing they need ahead of a quarterback, a wide receiver, a defensive lineman, is an offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
I am not impressed with what I see from this team in the run game, in pass protection. You know, it's one thing when you're playing Miami, another when you're playing an Atlanta team that isn't getting it done very well. Roger, you can speak to that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing Detroit and Carolina, that's a test of your line. Mm-hmm. And you know what, guys? They failed that test miserably. They couldn't run the ball. 88 yards on 44 carries over 2 weeks and 9 sacks. That's an indictment, guys. And, you know, it was at a point. Now, look, I understand Jermon Meredith is just a journeyman, you know, lineman, tackle, turn guard. You don't expect that guy to be starting for you, but who knows what Carl Nix is ever going to do, if he's ever going to play again.
Right.
He's not going to play again this year. I can't see it happening. They still haven't put him on IR, but I don't see it happening. Donald Penn, I think he's still solid. I don't think that's the issue. I'm worried about Davin Joseph. I don't know if he can, you know, just when you thought he was coming around, now he's getting blown off the ball again. DeMar Dotson, I think, might be their best lineman right now. And he's not much of a run blocker. He's a pass protector. And usually your right guard has to be your best run blocker. And so, you know, maybe they move him to left side. I don't know. But I think the offensive line, at this point, you're asking the question now, and I'll tell you right now, if the draft were tomorrow, I would say right now that, hey, don't be surprised if they trade up, move around, get another first-round pick somehow, and turn it into two offensive linemen. Wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a good point, because there's a lot of talk here about the same issue. You know, moving Sam Baker, who's been injured quite a bit in recent years, for a first-round pick, you know, along with Matt, what, 6 years ago, and moving him to right tackle. They need a left tackle. They moved Kuntz over to guard, which is where it should have been, and they got Joe Hawley now, and they're playing a lot better because Joe's taking charge, you know, after they lost Todd. But same thing with the Falcons. That's all they're talking about. They've got to rebuild that offensive line.
Yeah, and I think that's what – I think the Bucs probably feel the same way because, you know, here's the thing. You know, again, when you know, I wonder – with Davin Joseph in particular, you know, it's one thing to come off a knee injury and – everybody talks about Adrian Peterson and how quick he came back and he was stronger than ever. Well, you know, Adrian Peterson's not carrying 335 pounds on his body either.
Right.
You know, it's a lot different for an offensive lineman to get that explosion and that burst and power out of his legs if that knee can't work. Now, maybe 6 months from now, maybe it takes a year plus for an offensive lineman because of that, because of the size, because of, you know, the fulcrum and you know, all the physics involved. But if it's a case where he just doesn't have it anymore, you know, once there's a thing about NFL linemen, once they hit 30 and these guys are starting to approach that, you know, that can be the end. So I think it's something the Bucs really have to look at. The other thing they obviously have to have is they've got to have a really good edge rusher. It didn't work out with Daquan Bowers. My guess is that, you know, being realistic, my guess is that will be their first round pick, probably an edge rusher. Maybe it's Clowney. I don't know. They should be in the mix for that guy, depending on what happens down the stretch here. I think both lines are where they're going to focus most.
Hey, Roy, I watched that game Saturday, and I've heard a lot of reports. I didn't see the whole game, but I saw the fourth quarter and part most of it, and I wasn't that impressed. But they said, I guess, the first three quarters, you know, when the team is really doing a really being challenged, obviously, that he was phenomenal. And I thought I have to give credit because I know the family, I thought it was interesting. Spurrier, for one of the rare times, came out and complimented his quarterback, Connor Shaw, and said he's the greatest quarterback in South Carolina history, and I guess he is because he's 17-0 at home games at Williams-Brice Stadium. That's quite an accomplishment.
Wow.
Wow, that is an accomplishment. You're right. Well, the thing about Clowney is, and, you know, everything changes. You know, Clowney, he could end the college season as arguably the first – pick in everybody's mind, but then once you go through the evaluation process, you get through the Senior Bowl, you get through the East-West Shrine Game, and they start evaluating the guys at the lower end of the draft. You get into the combine, obviously. That's when these decisions are made, and that's when the real draft, the rankings really get solidified. So, you know, to me, someone else could emerge. You know, bowl games have a lot to do with it, how guys finish up, you know, there. Scouts are looking at those. So somebody could still emerge as a top player. But, you know, I think there's a chance just based on the fact that there are some questions about Clowney showing up every play and things like that. And he hasn't had a tremendous season this year, certainly not like he had last year.
Right.
But he could slip to a 5-6 position, and that's probably where the Bucs are going to be. And if they're in that position, it might just work out perfectly for them because usually the teams at the top of the draft need quarterback, and I think the Bucs can argue that they don't necessarily need a quarterback.
You said you were really happy with the quarterback as it stands right now. You think he's got it from the neck up. I did a show at College Station on Monday night. They're all concerned about what's going to happen with Captain Football down there. And just as a sidebar, they're going to rebuild their stadium to 109,000 people.
Woo. Oh, my God.
So, you know, we talk about Flutie and what he did with Boston College and how he built the stadium there. Well, this guy's building a stadium in College Station. That's the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
109,000 people. And they think he's going to go out. I don't think he's going to be a top draft choice myself. You know, he's got to be Fran Tarkington to be at the top of the board for me.
Well, that's just it. See, that's part of the thing about him is I think you're right, and I don't know what his advisors are going to tell him, and I don't know what his plan is, but my opinion, he needs to stay in school because he is not going to come out and be one of the top quarterbacks.
You and
year.
I are on the same page, boy. That's exactly what I said. We did the show, and I said, look, if they think he's going to be a top pick in the draft, they're crazy. I mean, there's no way that guy can be a top pick.
No, he doesn't measure up with the other guys. I think, you know, look, if he's happy being a third-round draft pick, good. Go do it. Because, again, the thing you got to weigh is how many teams actually need quarterbacks, want quarterbacks, will take quarterbacks. You got to weigh that. Because if you're not a first-round pick anymore, you're not going to get the big money. You know, the whole thing has changed, and so I really think he'll be much better off just staying in school and playing another year, and hoping that he can have another big season, and then he'll come out a year from now, and he will be one of the top quarterbacks. So I think he's got a big decision to make, and my guess is if they're, you know, you're right, unless they can build that new stadium to 109,000. Like within the next 9 months, I'm not sure it's going to matter that he built.
I mean, I just can't imagine 109,000 in College Station, Texas. I mean, that's just
nowhere.
Where are you going,
guys?
Where are you going to? You know, if you have a winning team like they've had the last 4 or 5 years, you know, okay, well, not the last 4 or 5, the last two with the new coaches really when they started to win. Sherman didn't win anything, but and then going into the
make change in the conference and so forth. But holy smokes, 109,000 people.
Oh,
I mean, Michigan's making their part bigger too, but, you know, Michigan can hold 113,000 people.
Yeah, and you're not far from Detroit.
No,
in that area.
That's right.
Hey, Roy, I wanted to ask you, do you think after Monday night the Saints have been exposed now after what Seattle did to them?
Mm.
You know, I don't know if they've been exposed. I see where you're coming from, but I honestly think that they just went into a place that was absolutely ready to show the world that, you know, that 12th man means something there, and I think they got caught off guard by it. I don't think they were prepared for it. They started off slowly on both sides of the ball and got overwhelmed and couldn't fight back.
Right.
I don't think it exposes them. I still think I'd like to see that game on their turf. I'd like to see that game on,
right.
you know, in New Orleans. I don't think we will now, but I'd like to. But I don't think it exposes them because, again, New Orleans has just—I mean, they've just wasted people. You know, the Buccaneers were one of the few teams early on to kind of keep them from you know blowing them out. But at the same time, you know, and the thing that you want to know about New Orleans is how do they adjust from that? You know, does that define them? I don't think it does, but it could. You know, if they can't adjust and bounce back, yeah, then it's going to show something.
Well, I heard a statistic the other day that every team that has lost to Seattle has lost the next week.
Ooh.
Yeah, I heard
that
seriously. And the other thing is, talking about the Seahawks, I think they're the best team in the NFC now. No doubt.
But
they
have
five undrafted rookies that are making major contributors and contributions. When have you ever seen that? Five undrafted rookies.
Well, the 49ers are doing the same thing, Roger. They really have transposed that team. They're a young team. I mean, they brought a lot of young people in there that have really played.
Yeah, you're seeing it more often. The Bucs have had a lot of undrafted rookies. You know, Donald Penn is one. DeMar Dotson is one. Bobby Rainey is one.
Right.
It happens. But you're right. At that level, to play where they're playing, you know, I think part of the reason is they've really that defensive line of theirs, they can rotate, six guys, seven guys, and every one of them is just as good as the next.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Bennett, who led the Bucs in sacks a year ago, and I think we all know how good of a run stopper he is, and really pass rush wasn't his forte. He was primarily a run stopper, but he came up with 9 sacks. You know, when he learned, you know, how to make some pass rush moves and make that effective, you know, here's a guy who you bring in that guy off the bench. You know, that's a starting caliber player, and I think that's what's happened there. And Sherman makes a big difference in the secondary, obviously. And Russell Wilson's ability to just lay a ball in there over everybody's heads, you know, on a hot read, that's really remarkable.
Roy, let me ask you this, because there's a lot of comments now on up here in the Northeast about what's going on, then not only in National Football League, but college football as well. And that play in the Auburn game was, we talked about all the points within that play, but we didn't touch on the fact that they put the 1 second back on the clock. And everybody is now saying, we got too much replay. I mean, we're going away from football, and we have too much replay. And you know, making things like this a fraction of an inch here, a juggle that, you know, maybe they got to go to stop action to find the juggle. I mean, I think they've overdone it. I think that the league and all of them should take a step back and reevaluate.
I won't disagree with that. You know, what's always I've always found rather interesting is, you know, it's a game where I guess about 90% of the plays are eyeballed by the officials until you get into the end zone, you know, and then all of a sudden everything's got to be reviewed.
Right.
You know, and I understand that's the biggest thing is, you know, did the guy score? But my point is, you know, here's another interesting thing. The Bucs had a situation last week where Cam Newton dove over the line from 2 yards out.
Right.
They eventually, it was about a yard and a half, I guess. They called it a 1 yard run. But he dove over the line, reached the ball over, and as he's reaching the ball over, it got slapped out of his hands, and it was fumbled away.
Right.
But it's not fumble because he crossed the plane.
Correct.
All right, fine. I understand. You cross this imaginary line with the ball in your hand, touchdown. Okay, good. Well, why doesn't that work when you're a receiver?
Right.
When you're a receiver, once you have possession of the ball for even the most microsecond you can possibly imagine, in your hands, inside that boxed area that we call the end zone, then why do you have to fall to the ground and make sure you maintain possession through the catch? Because I'll say this, Cam Newton didn't maintain possession through the play, through his run. The ball got knocked out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an inconsistency. And the reason I bring it up is because I think it's just an example of all the inconsistencies in the game of football where, again, like I said, it's eyeball. Referees come from, you know, 25, 30 yards from the sideline, you know, eyeballing a spot where they think the runner, you know, was down, put the ball down, and sometimes that's 3 inches over the marker, sometimes, you know, a foot behind. You know, and this is how games and, you know, possessions and series are decided. So, you know, and part of me doesn't have a problem with that. You know, that's the way it worked for years. It was fine. So I tend to agree with you, Don. I think we are getting to the point where they're overdoing this replay stuff.
Exactly. Roy, what about Buffalo coming in at the Ray J? It scares me about Buffalo, their rush defense against the Bucs offensive line. It's hopefully they can block, and hopefully the Bucs can win on Sunday. I'm saying 21-20 for the Bucs on Sunday. That's my pick of the week, lock of the week. I think the Bucs are playing much better football under Coach Shiano right now. It's a tough loss. Go up to Carolina, 7 wins in a row. Carolina's won a great football team like New Orleans and Seattle right now. But Buffalo's coming down a little bit to the Bucs competition, and it's going to be a good football game on Sunday afternoon. I can't wait for it.
Well, you know what? You're right, Tommy. I think the two teams do match up well. If you're a Bucs fan, if you're a Bills fan, you know, this is a game that I think you can measure your team against. It's unfortunate that the Buccaneers are in a position where they have to measure themselves against the 4-8 Buffalo Bills, but they do. But you're right. I look at the Bills and I kind of wonder myself, you know, how the heck are they 4-8? You know, because they lead the league in sacks with 43.
Right.
They're very good against the run. They're not very good against the run, but they run the ball extremely well.
Right.
So they do some of the things, you know, that you want to get after the pass, and they run it well. The quarterback's not bad. You know, so I'm with you. I kind of wonder and just say, gosh, how the heck are these guys 4-8? So I think it's a good test for the Bucs. I think it's a good test of, you know, it's a good matchup of what the Bucs do well against what the Bills do well, and it should be an interesting game. I think you're right. I think it'll be very close. I'm hoping there's a little more scoring than 21-20, but you know what? I think it's...
Hey, Roy, I think a couple of years ago when the Bucs were playing the Bills, this be back in the 80s, I was a season ticket holder for the Bucs back then. Halftime score was the Bucs 5, Buffalo 3.
Well, did you hear that, Don? He bought a ticket.
Buffalo,
I'd like to see the stub.
Yeah, I want
to
see
I'll show it to you next time you come down. I think I still have it around.
And we
everybody
still got
there.
Roy with us? You still have the fleas off the first nickel you ever get. Is Roy still with us, Frank?
Is Roy still there?
No, he's gone.
Oh, okay. I'd like to thank Roy for all his time again, guys. You know, but I think, like I said before, it's gonna be good game for the Bucs, who they can measure up against Buffalo. But what can you say about Nick Foles and the Eagles, guys? 7-5. Nick Foles, 19 touchdowns. I mean. I watched that game on Sunday down at Doubletree. No Leo, but Paul Perron was down there. The whole gang was down.
Well, he got lucky that no interceptions should have been broken. He got lucky on that, but you're right.
Right.
He has really played well, and all the papers now talking about there's no question about who's going to be the quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, that's
hey, Tommy,
sure.
We also have our resident
Kelly, too. I really do.
Yes, sir, Frank.
Yeah, we have Doug's on with us.
Oh, there.
Okay.
There we go.
Bobby, I just want to say one thing about the Buffalo game coming up because they hit a number on the Falcons and almost beat the Falcons.
Ooh.
And so you just never know. And like Roy was saying, you know, you wonder why they're 4-8. But I don't know whether you fellas saw it or not. I believe that the attendance up at the Rogers Center in Toronto was 39,000.
Oh.
Now you tell me you would get a bigger house at Orchard Park.
Great. You have to that, Roger. I mean, they did that for like the, probably just for the publicity of the NFL going to Toronto indoor game. But once you, if you're a Buffalo season ticket holder, it says Buffalo Bills, and you want to play
right.
the game in Buffalo at Orchard Park. Why would you make the drive up to Toronto for 39,000? Like, say the Blue Jays are playing a game, say, down in Buffalo for a real game down there for Major League Baseball, they wouldn't draw probably 29,000 up there in that. But
listen, I give Tommy and everybody, I give them a lot of credit up there, because I want to tell you, 90% of their games are in the cold, the rain, the snow,
right, exactly.
and they still turn out in Buffalo. They still
mm-hmm.
turn out in Buffalo with 39,000. Why would you move to play games in Toronto when at home the worst you're going to do is draw 55,000?
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's well, you like to walk in their golf pro, Doug. How's the weather doing down in Baltimore? And the Ravens got a good win over beating Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving night. What a football game that was.
Yeah, I tell you, I've just been patiently waiting. I know we talk about a lot of things on the show and Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it's always good to listen to what's kind of going on, you know, around the week. But how about our buddies in Pittsburgh and the Ravens pulling out a big win and Coach Tomlin a little later in his wallet this week?
Yeah, we have this.
You know, Doug, we talked about that. Now, tell me, what does the Baltimore media have to say about those topics?
Well, you know, it's really... yeah. Really kind of a weird situation, obviously, you know, with... I mean, the I think Mike Tomlin kind of, you know, he played a lot of it off, and then there was a feed from Pittsburgh that kind of showed, like, Jacoby Jones running down the sideline, and you could clearly see Tomlin take a step to his right, you know, and then he kind of stepped right onto the field, and then he darted off the field. And watching the game from the Baltimore perspective down here, you know, there were a lot of fans that were obviously up in arms about that. Clearly, it could have impacted the game, and why they didn't throw a flag on it, I have no idea from the start. I mean, he should have probably scored a touchdown, or the rules would state that they could have awarded him a touchdown.
They could award him a touchdown, right.
I think at that point, if he scores a touchdown, that game's over. You know, and Baltimore had to make a pretty good stand, you know, down on the end there to preserve the win. And, you know, when you're this late in the season, you're talking about the playoffs. I mean, the Ravens at 6-6 are holding on to that last playoff spot. I mean, that was a huge impact for, you know, the potential of football with, you know, Minnesota coming into town. I'd like to think from a Baltimore perspective that we could beat Minnesota and go to 7-6 and still hold on to that last spot. So, you know, that's a huge thing. You know, from the perspective, I guess, of the media, I mean, there's constant coverage. I mean, this is kind of a big thing because now they're talking about the possibility of losing a draft pick or something like that. So, I mean, $100,000, man, that's pretty steep. You know?
Exactly, for a coach
and
up there.
And possible draft picks.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I'm saying. They're going to reevaluate that as they get closer to the draft to see if they're going to lose a pick or two picks or whatever it is. So, I mean, that's pretty significant, you know what I mean? And, you know, again, I'm just glad it didn't impact the game, you know, in the final score.
Doug, let me ask you this question, because we talked about it just before you came on, and it involved a TV replay. You know, right now they're thinking that maybe TV replay is overdone. There's too much TV replay. Not giving enough to the officials. But I also noticed this week there's a change in your game because of what happened with Tiger. Now if the ball moves and they can only see it on TV, it's going to be eliminated.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you know, I think, I guess to your point, Don, that for many, many years, obviously, we've relied on, you know, kind of the training of whether it be referees or umpires or officials or what have you to, you know, use their judgment and know the rules and you know, eye up a lot of these different things. And I know that the game's not perfect on either side and people make mistakes, but, you know, to me, for people to sit at home and watch golf on TV and then to call in and say, hey, I think he did something he shouldn't have done, and then to later go back and assess a penalty, I mean, That's a difficult situation. You know what I mean? Again, that you're determining the outcome of something that otherwise, you know, wouldn't have happened. You know, and it's kind of like one of my responsibilities as a PGA golf professional is to make sure that my golf course has the appropriate hazard stakes, out of bounds stakes, and where applicable, you know, you're going to connect those stakes with paint. And so when you have tournaments, I always tell my assistants to go out and mark the golf course. Don't let the tournament be decided on you making a crooked line. You know what I mean? So, you know, if you kind of do what you're supposed to do, then no one's ever going to come in and say, oh, well, looks like you must have been riding in a golf cart and you did it the lazy man's way and you know what I mean, just had the paint gun in your hand and you made a little crooked line there and I happened to be in play because you know, did something, you know, that you weren't supposed to. So that's what I was telling them. You know, don't let it come down to you to make the outcome of the game. You know, and I know that anybody who is an official or umpire or whatever, they're doing the best they can, and they're not perfect. I mean, when you got balls, whatever sport you're talking about, moving that fast, I mean, you're going to be able to make mistakes. But I
Doug,
think we have gone a little bit too far.
We've seen now at least, what, I would say 5 calls that have been changed or talked about in golf in the last 3 years.
Right.
Because somebody's sitting at home.
Yeah.
Nobody recognized it, and somebody sitting at home calls in, as you said, and you know, challenges what the officials are doing, and they change it.
Yeah, well, keep in mind that when you go through the drive-thru at McDonald's and get a cup of coffee, they have to put hot caution on it. You know what I mean? You know,
right.
So that's unfortunately the world we live in that says, hey, wait a minute, that guy's doing something he shouldn't do, and I'm going to call in, and I'm going to make everybody know about it. I mean, you know, the game of golf is predicated on integrity and a lot of the things of character that make these guys play an honest round of golf. And I don't necessarily think that anybody does anything at that level. I mean, those guys they're aware of the rules. They typically call over rules officials just to make it official. But they're pretty aware of the rules and what they can and can't do, you know. So I think in a lot of those instances, it's a little bit of an overkill to have people, you know, sitting at home saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't think he's supposed to do that.
Yeah, he touched the leaf here. Wait a minute, touched this. I mean,
right,
come on.
I mean, I don't even know what kind of volume of calls they get, but I bet you it's off the hook with, you know, the excessive media coverage that we get, you know, watching a lot of these tournaments. I mean, how many years ago was it when you watched a golf tournament, you know, if Jack Nicklaus was on, you're probably watching him the whole time, and you didn't see, you know, some dude who was, you know what I mean, in 30th place because no one cared about him, you know?
Roy made a couple of good points talking about football and the replay and you know, exactly when does somebody juggle the ball. I mean, the guy's on the ground and nobody can see it. Then you have stop action, slow motion, camera stopping, and then you can see that he juggled it. I mean, come on. It's getting out of hand.
I mean, I kind of think that, because, you know, obviously they're talking about this in baseball to find a happy medium of how many quote-unquote challenges they're going to get during the game. So I think in football, obviously, to get your amount of challenges as a set number, I think the overkill is we're going to review every scoring play, and then inside of 2 minutes we're going to review everything. And then, you know what I mean? So now, I mean, at what point are you just going to say, hey, wait a minute, we're just going to review the whole damn game? You know what I mean?
Hey, Doug, what is your golf tip of the week real quick? If you get one for the northeast and one for down here for these people playing in the 80-degree heat down here, probably.
Well, I tell you know, you're in the 80-degree heat. I tell you, tomorrow they're calling for a high temp up here of 60 degrees. So, you know, it's kind of that Indian summer kind of going on here as we're getting some bonus time to play golf. And I had, obviously from – you know, a limited daylight standpoint, anytime you tee off kind of past 1 o'clock, you're generally not going to get your full 18 in up here. And most of my members are trying to play in that kind of 10:30 to 1 o'clock range. And so they're just going out and just we actually have winter tees out now to kind of preserve some of the golf course because we're not obviously in a growing season, so the course is a little bit shortened. So, you know, a lot of the guys that are going out to play are working on maybe – a lot of the short game stuff because they're hitting the golf ball a little longer from a shortened set of tees, and so it makes their wedges a little bit more, you know, their scoring clubs, as an example, to be a heavier value to those. So, green wise, I mean, you know, we're doing the best we can to keep them, you know, true roll, and you're going to get some inconsistencies in them, but mostly the wedges, I would say, is probably a lot of what guys are kind of working on. And I took a couple of my assistants out, whether it was a week or two ago, and we played one club. So you got 2 golf balls and 1 club, and we played the Winter Tees for 5 holes just to, you know, kind of create a lot of different shots and have a little fun with some of the game. I chose a 6-iron. It was kind of a windy day, and believe you me, it's difficult to putt with a 6-iron. So me and my partner didn't do so well that day. But so northeast-wise, yeah, just kind of getting a good walk in, you know, working on some different shots and having some fun with the game at this point in time. Now, you know, guys like you who are down in the south, I actually have a friend of mine who is a superintendent down at a course in Florida. At, I think it's Bonita Bay, I think, which is where he is. And he was telling me they did 5,000 rounds in the month of November.
Wow.
And, you know, so people down there are obviously itching to start their season and get out and play. And it's always funny how you look at some of the merchandising that's involved in golf, because we're getting to the tail end of our season, or actually past that. You know, guys in the southeast or the south are just kind of, you know, gearing up and kind of getting into their new technology, and you'll see a lot of the different clubs that are being released from Callaway's reintroduced their famous line of Big Bertha with some improvements, and TaylorMade has some new clubs, and, you know, Toast has some new irons and stuff out there. So, again, you know, as they're getting ready for their golf season, always good to get your PGA professional involved and start your season off correctly, maybe have him take a quick peek at some fundamentals, or, you know, go through the process of the fitting to kind of check some clubs. And I'm always a big proponent of making sure that you don't have any noticeable gaps in your set, so that you get to a yardage and you don't kind of have the right club for it, whether it's a wedge or a hybrid, or, you know, getting some of those long irons out of your bag. So just kind of, you know, make sure you have the right makeup, the right set composition. There's a lot of good, you know, technology. We talked about golf balls. Callaway has a brand new premium golf ball, and some different brand new golf ball being released from TaylorMade. So, you know, always check your set, check your stuff. We do a lot of regripping this time of year, so before you put your clubs away in the Northeast, it's always good to kind of have some club repair stuff, you know, addressed before you know, throw those into the club storage for the season. So,
what ball do you use, Doug?
I have been a loyal Titleist supporter for as long as I can remember. I played the Pro B1X, and you know, just to look down and see the name Titleist and the red numbers on there. I always play the high numbers. Typically, when you buy a golf ball, you'll get them numbers 1 through 4. I typically play 6 through 8, or 5 through 8, and it kind of helps in the. You should always mark your golf ball with something, whether it's a Sharpie or a distinguished mark, so that you can tell it apart. Because most people don't realize that if, you know, say Don, you and I are playing around the golf, and we happen to have the exact same numbered golf ball, the exact same Titleist.
Right.
We hit our golf ball right down the middle of the fairway, and we're right next to each other. We can't tell those apart. So we go back to we call that a lost ball.
Tell Don's apart. You'll be able to tell Don's apart.
He
has a smile.
This show was going so smoothly and so well.
Tell you what, guys, that information was the cat's meow.
That's right.
Oh, no.
That is
right. Leo, how you doing this evening? Frankie, welcome aboard, guys.
Well, I'm sorry I'm late, guys, but we had conference night at school, so I had to deal with the little parents. So,
hey, Leo, just to let you know, I was done with my segment, so don't worry about me.
Leo, do you have to go in all the time when the kids have parent night? Do you have to go in all the time for that so they can teach you something?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. What they're not teaching me is birth control.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Planned Parenthood didn't go over well in the hood.
Oh, no. Frankie, Leo, welcome to the program, guys. You want to do the football picks while we got some time here? Or
yeah.
I get a kick Capone out of his chair here. He's giving me this stare up here and that, so what else to do about that? He's just giving me this stare. Now he's going to walk in distance here. But I got a funny story for you guys real quick. Barbie was cleaning the house today, guys, right? Mm-hmm. And I come back from the store up there. She's using Nick Foles' wristband for when she's cleaning the house. I said, put that wristband down. I said, why are you cleaning house? That's from Nick Foles he gave to me. I'll make a donation in Tampa, Delphi next time I go down there so they can auction that off down there. She said, Nick who? Eagles quarterback, 19-0 for the pass, touchdowns, interception ratio. Who's that guy? I said, put that thing face down now.
step away from the car.
Tommy, couch.
Yes, sir.
The epilogue of that is, does Leo have enough room on his couch for you, too?
You got any rooms down there? You got any rooms down there at all?
Yeah, Tommy, we got room for you, Tommy.
I know one thing. It's not a two-seated couch.
It's a one-seater, that's for sure. It's a one-seater, but she's cleaning the trees up today with using that, the wristband, and she put that thing down. Who's Nick Foles? So they put that thing down, and she was saying. And another funny story, Lou, you'll love this. Bugsy got away today, right? So he's running around the neighborhood up there. Roger, you know Bugsy, and everybody knows Bugsy, right?
Yeah.
He's running around the neighborhood, right? Barbie's going out the front door. Bugsy. So Bugsy shows up the side door of the pool and takes a dip in the pool. She comes out. Where's that dog at? Well, he's in the pool.
Get to the football picks.
This show's going to pot right now. Okay, football picks. Houston at Jacksonville. Who wants to lead off tonight? Pardon me?
Don't say pot with a cop around.
The show is going to, you know what, I'm not saying that. I apologize, Frank.
Is there a problem, officer? You only say pot if you're on the air in Colorado and Washington.
That's right.
All right, who wants to lead off? Houston at Jacksonville for football picks this week.
Houston's got to win a game.
Yeah, I'm with you, Leo. I got to say, Houston, they got to break this losing streak and win some games.
Right. Yeah, I'm with that, you guys. Houston.
Okay.
If not, Kubiak's going to jump off the high bridge.
Well, he's going to be gone. Either way, he's going to be gone at the end of the year. But he's got to win this week.
I think that's the battle of the number one and number two picks in next year's draft.
All right. Frank, are you going to go with Houston?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Houston.
Okay.
Yeah,
Frank?
I'll take Houston.
I'm going with Jacksonville.
Hey,
got two whole wins
this year. I'm going to call my mom and have the bottle taken away from my dad.
That's my lock of the week.
I'm sure what he's drinking, but it's something good.
That's my lock of the week, Jacksonville over Houston.
You just gave us, a minute ago, you just gave us the lock of the week was Tampa Bay.
Oh, okay. Take that back. I'm sorry. Atlanta at Green Bay. Oh, boy. I'm going to go Rodgers Falcons. They're going to win something.
I'm going the other way. I'm going with Green Bay.
Okay,
yeah,
gentlemen.
I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be back, and I think that'll turn them around.
Yeah.
Guys, I don't think he's going to be back. That's why I'm calling Atlanta.
Ooh. All right, Doug.
I'm going to take the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey,
Frank.
Tommy, Packers. Whoever I pick, just put Doug on the other side. You know that's what I'm saying.
You're going against the cat, right, Leo?
Yeah, what's wrong, Leo? Cat got your tongue?
Oh, no.
Nobody's got something else.
Yeah.
No, it's not the real thing because that's too small.
That sounds like the voice of experience. I'm getting a little worried.
Yeah.
Remember the voice? Lee, remember the voice of God? I wonder what he's doing.
The voice of God.
Yep.
Real quick, guys, I'm doing a radio show with Tommy, and I don't know who the producer is, and all of a sudden he comes on, the Montreal Canadiens. And I go, what the hell is that, the voice of God? Who the hell is that guy?
John's ascended died, boys.
Frank or Frankie for Atlanta and Green Bay?
Green Bay.
You know, if Ed Lacy doesn't have, I mean, he had, 16 yards on 10 carries last week. If he doesn't come up with a big game, I'm going to go with Green Bay. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to come back, and I think that's going to give some consistency to Eddie Lacy. I think Nick Perry is set to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's got the defense at least looking a little better. I'm going to pick Green Bay.
If Aaron Rodgers plays
Frank,
Green Bay, Frank wins,
testosterone level again.
Minnesota, Baltimore, I know one pick is good. I've made two picks already, Doug and Frank. And I'm going to go
Baltimore.
With Baltimore, too.
Well, Doug already said Baltimore
Frank.
Was a winner this week. There's no chance they can lose, so I'm going with Baltimore as well.
Okay.
Baltimore.
Everybody, Baltimore, I guess. Okay. All right. Andy Reid goes back to Washington. I'm going to go with Andy Reid. KC at Washington, we'll go with Mr. Reid and company.
Yeah,
they're
going
to turn it around this week.
Yep. I think Washington has, there's really trouble. The coach, the quarterback, the players. Right now, they're in disarray. I got to go. Against Washington.
Yeah, I got to take Kansas City, too. And I'll tell you what, guys, maybe Donovan McNabb wasn't all wrong down there.
Good point.
Yeah, right. Good point.
Great
good
point, Leo.
Yeah.
Frank,
you know,
thank you.
If you guys remember, when we were talking about KC at the beginning of the season, I said that I thought they were going to have a run until they hit Denver, San Diego, Denver. I think they'll beat Washington, Oakland, and they'll lose to Indy. So I think this is a win.
Yeah.
What's that?
Okay. All right. Frank, KC, Doug?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. I like KC, and I think the bigger thing for Washington is obviously, you know, we know they're not playing good football, and there's a lot of questions surrounding, you know, RG3. And obviously, you know, their head coach, Shanahan. But I think, if anything, we got to be careful that RG3 doesn't get hurt this week against KC's defense because, I mean, they're pretty nasty.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Buffalo at Tampa Bay. I'm going to go to the beloved Bucks. So hopefully the Bucks can win. Gentlemen?
I've got to go with it, Tommy. I think the Bucks are going to win this game at home, and I agree with Roy. I think they've put some things together, and I'm going to go with them.
Yeah.
Gentlemen?
I'll go with you fellas with the Bucks.
Okay, right.
You know what, fellas? If there's one team that is more snake-bitten with fumbles and stuff, it's the Buffalo Bills.
You're right, Leo.
The problem is you're getting them in warm weather, 80 degrees, and I think C.J. Spiller, being from Florida, has a breakout game. The Bills by 7.
Ooh. Uh-oh. Doug?
Well, I was listening to you guys earlier, and I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are playing some decent football. I know they're a little banged up, and they got Bobby Rainey in there running the football, former Baltimore Raven there, but I think Tampa Bay wins the football game. I just don't think Buffalo's that good of a team.
Frank or Frankie?
If you look at the interception rate, the Bucks absolutely take the cake for this season. I think that's going to be the big thing. They're going to be out there looking to take a couple balls away, and they're going to win.
Is Revis playing, by the way, guys?
Oh, boy, I think he's questionable. It's sort of that got the release is questionable right now.
Yeah, there's another one. You know, if Rodgers plays, Green Bay wins. If Revis plays, Tampa Bay wins. If he doesn't, Buffalo wins. Because now you're trying to have Leonard Johnson cover, take your pick. Stevie Johnson. Hey, we'll see who's got the big Johnson out there, won't we?
Miami at
you know,
Pittsburgh.
I'm going to have to go with the Bills. I mean, they addressed they just signed Tony Moikai, so they addressed a hole there. And you know, Steve Jackson and Scott Chandler are both at about 500 yards for the year. And with Spiller, I mean, if they've got a short, you know, option with Tony, I think Buffalo wins this game.
Okay. Next game, Miami at Pittsburgh. I'm going to go with the Dolphins. I just don't like Pittsburgh at all. Gentlemen.
Well, is Tomlin suiting up?
He's day-to-day right now.
Yeah. No, he's sideline to sideline.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, who's Miami at Pittsburgh?
I don't see Miami going in and winning a game up north in December. I'm sorry. I got to go with Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a rainy, cold, wet Sunday up here. I'm going to go Leo's way. I don't think they can win up here either.
I'm with you guys.
Okay. Frank?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Pittsburgh. I don't think Tannehill can win up there. I think he's going to face a really angry Steelers defense.
Okay, Doug, I know you don't like Pittsburgh. You're going to Miami side?
Well, I tell you, I would agree with you guys. I don't necessarily think that Miami is – they got their own issues, and I don't really think they're that good of a football team either. That being said, I'm going to pick Miami because I'll never pick Pittsburgh.
I know that. I know it. All right, Frank, will you pick Miami or at Baltimore? Miami at Pittsburgh, I'm sorry.
I'm picking the team that their quarterback hasn't been accused of malfeasance with young ladies.
Miami.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Detroit at Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. Nick Foles and company. Gentlemen.
Boy, Detroit lost another player today for four games. Another drug deal, but I'm going with the Eagles.
All right, good.
I'm taking the Eagles.
Donnie, what else is there to do in Detroit but two drugs? I mean, there's not enough. I mean, you can't even go out.
I'll tell you,
in
all honesty, if you saw Detroit play on Thanksgiving Day, you said that's a team that should be, you know, right there with the top echelon of football. But no discipline, drug guys, fights. I mean, it's unbelievable the talent they have. And if you saw them on Thanksgiving Day, you say, how could this team lose?
That could be a coach, Don, that's going to be shown the door at the end of the season, even with a decent record.
Well,
no,
man,
I
don't. If I were a coach out there being interviewed for that job, I'd love to get that one. That'd be just like Andy Reid getting out there in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
You're close to the casinos. That's a good thing about Detroit. You play an indoor stadium. You got a great fan base up there, and that's a great place to play.
Yeah,
okay,
that's the only. That's the only people left in Detroit, are these 60,000 that show up at the game. I tell you what, guys, the bad news is Nick Foles throws an interception.
Ooh.
The good news is the Eagles still win.
Okay, I got you down. Okay, who else we need? Frankie, and then and Doug.
Yep.
Oh, Eagles?
Yep, for me.
Yeah, I don't think Foles is going to – Foles is making decisions that, you know, a lot of veteran quarterbacks haven't been able to make. I think Foles doesn't throw an interception.
Okay. All right, so we got star frame over here, right? We're all set?
Yeah,
okay.
I'll pick the Eagles in the over.
Okay, great. Okay. All right. Indianapolis at Cincinnati. I got to go with Cincinnati for this one here. Gentlemen?
Cincinnati at home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, Don, you talk about a team that's Jekyll and Hyde. How about Indianapolis?
Yeah.
Right.
I think here we go. We get them out of the dome again, and I think Cincinnati wins out. You know, Cincinnati went out and beat San Diego last week. I think that's a big win for them.
Well, yes. Cincinnati plays so well at home, and they play terribly on the road.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Cincinnati.
Okay. Gentlemen?
I'll take Cincinnati.
Okay. Star frame
so
far.
Indy's banged up. I'm going to have to go with Cincinnati too. Indy.
Okay.
Indy's a pretty banged up team.
Okay.
You know, Cincy, the games they lost, they didn't. I mean, they lost by three. The biggest deficit was a 9-point loss to Cleveland. You know.
Wow. And they're not. And Cleveland's not even in the league anymore.
No, high school now.
Yeah, they were replaced by Alabama.
That Jack Brown's Jacksonville game was god awful. I was watching that, Leo, at the double cheating. Everybody's god awful. Browns are captain happy. I'm gonna go with the Browns. There's another loser for me. Go with the Browns.
Who's gonna quarterback? They're down to number six.
The guy off the street.
Ain't gonna win without a quarterback.
The guy off the street.
No way he'll pick Cleveland.
He'll quarterback for food, probably. That's about it. I guess everybody's been doing
it for them now. Bernie Kosar, did they bring him back? Or
Brian Slate, probably from California. I don't know.
They got Milk Plum under center this week.
Yeah.
Frank Ryan, right? Get back Frank Ryan, Bernie Kosar, the old days. Well, they got a. I heard that station up Cleveland. They said they got a guy quarterbacking for food up there. So,
yeah,
not good at all.
They can bring somebody in that's dead. They do better than what they have.
Hey guys, but here's the worst thing: Josh Freeman can't even start for Cleveland. That's why Seattle keeps his job because he figured out Freeman was terrible.
Oh, well, you got to give him credit for that. Oh, here's a game in a WEAK. Oakland at the Jets. This I'm going to go with the Jets here. This is going to be bad football. Gentlemen?
Well, I'll tell you, Rex's job is on the line now. I'm going to go with you, Tommy. I got to go with the Jets this week. I think Rex is going to try to pull something out.
I hope he does. Gentlemen?
I do, too, and I hope he gets more than 3 points.
Well, he's gone 2 weeks in a row getting three.
That's right.
Can you go 3 for 3?
Have a trifecta.
Hey, fellas, can you pick a tie? First nothing tie in NFL history. I just don't see Oakland coming 3,000 miles and winning this game. I got to take the Jets. And again, I got a gun in my head for that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Doug,
you know, I'm going to go with Oakland. I mean, they're bringing Geno Smith back. I mean, he's not the answer to anything. I mean, that guy's going to be a bigger bust than Akili Smith.
Okay, so we're all set for that game. Frank, who are you picking for that?
I'm going to go with Rex.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Frank, you're going to go with Rex, too?
I'll take the Jets, yeah.
Okay, everybody's got the Jets. Okay. Denver, Tennessee at Denver. This is a so much match game. I'm going to go with Denver. This one, the Maha City.
Yeah, we'd have to talk about this one, Denver.
Denver.
All-star frame for Denver, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not so fast.
Oh, okay.
Friend.
Ooh.
Already.
I'm taking Denver, too.
This game should be the best game of the whole weekend right now, I think, for Sunday. Seattle or San Francisco up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna go with Seattle. What I saw on Monday night with Seattle, I'm gonna go with the Hawks going that one there. Gentlemen?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm gonna go the other way. I think San Francisco is gonna win this game. I think Seattle's had a great run, but I think this is the week they're gonna have a little let up.
Okay.
And, guys, there is a lot of animosity between Pete Carroll and John Harbaugh.
You can say that again.
Yeah, I mean, Stanford went for 2 one time when they were in Southern Cal and this and the other thing. I'll tell you what, those Seattle fellas, they're really, really good. And I think it doesn't matter where they play. I think Seattle wins this one.
Matter what?
Yeah, I like Seattle, even though they've had a short week and they're going to be playing at San Fran. But after what I saw, I'm impressed with this team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody else,
you know, the way Seattle's playing, they could do a 2-hour turnaround and beat San Francisco.
Oh,
geez.
Those guys are just.
Well, I'll tell you, Frankie, they look good when I saw them play the Falcons here. There's no doubt about it. They're quite a team.
Mm-hmm. As Frank was saying, we got to make these picks real quick. It's tick, tick, tick right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Giants at San Diego. I'm going to go with San Diego.
I'm going to go with San Diego
at home.
Yeah, San Diego.
Okay.
I'm going to take the Giants because San Diego, just every time you like them, they blow it.
Okay. We're all set, Frank or Frankie, for this game?
I'm going to go with the Giants.
Okay.
You were going against Manti Te'o? I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Doug, who's picking Giants or San Francisco? I mean, Giants or San Diego, I'm sorry.
I'd like to think that the Giants could beat them, but, just like Leo said, every time the Giants look like they're doing something good, they blow it. So I'm going to take the former North Turners to win that game.
All right, St. Louis at Arizona. Arizona wins at their home. Everybody's Arizona?
Arizona.
Yeah.
Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, best game probably for this division the Bucs are in. Carolina at New Orleans. I'm going to go with Carolina this game. Carolina's playing a good football right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take New Orleans to bounce back.
Ooh,
yeah, I'll take New Orleans to bounce back, too.
Okay. Leo?
Gentlemen, New Orleans is 6-0 in the Dome. Tommy, where are they playing this game?
In the Dome.
Go with the Domers.
Frank?
No.
Frank or Frank?
Well, the Domers are also Notre Dame, so I got to go with the Domers.
Okay. Frank, yeah. Doug?
Yeah, tough bounce back after getting your tail handed to you from the Seahawks. But, I like Leo's point of view there. And I think play well on the Dome. And I think they're pretty mad about losing that game, so I think they bounce back here.
Cowgirls at the Bears. Anybody but the Cowgirls, the Bears.
The Bears on a rebound.
The Bears.
Is Cutler playing this week?
I'm
maybe.
Not sure.
It's a maybe.
Still day-to-day as of this afternoon.
Yeah.
I don't care who plays. I'm taking the Romo and company.
Yeah.
Oh, you're taking Romo.
That could be a high-scoring game. I think the Cowboys, although Sean Lee's coming back, but I still think their defense is pretty terrible. I think the Bears can eat this one out.
Okay.
Especially in Chicago with the weather.
That's right. Okay.
That's
so
true.
We're all set then. Frankie, you got the Bears, Ren?
Bears.
Yep.
I'm Bears.
Okay. Hey, Don, I forgot. I should have called you during the week. Guess who's the offensive coordinator for Cleveland Browns is? You'd never guess.
I don't know.
Norv Turner.
Oh, no. That's right. I did know that. I did know that.
Hey, guys.
I'll tell you one thing. Here's a guy that's the most consistent coach in football.
Terrible.
Yeah. No, he gets the Eddie Kayak Award.
I guess we can end the show for now, and Leo, that was a great comment. That's pretty good. Tick, tick, tick on the clock.
Hey, Tommy, real quick, I know you got to go, but if Ohio State, Florida State, and Auburn wins, it's still Ohio State and Florida State in the BS.
No question.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank
no
you
question.
For saying that. Thank
yep.
you for saying that. Leo, I'll see you Sunday at the Buccos game.
Absolutely.
Roger, thank you for coming on. God bless. Don, thank
you
for coming on.
God bless the guys. Have a great week.
God bless Roger and Don.
Yep.
Thank
hey,
you for coming
hey, Doug,
on.
Doug, set the cat for me.
You got it, baby. He will
tell
you a Merry Christmas.
Because he'd be the one on the buffet line.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas,
Leo. I'll see you on Sunday.
Nope.
Doug, thanks for coming on again. I'd like to thank, to Tim Welke for Cubs scout for coming on. Tim Taylor from the St. Louis Blues coming on. A dear friend of mine, Roy Cummings, another dear friend of mine from coming on. To apologize for not getting Tom Ryan. I want to get to squeeze with Tom on next week's show. And I most of all, I'd like to thank Bradford White Water Heaters. When you purchase water, log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country. If you have Tim Baker, call. He won't call us. 352-588-5454. The Abbey Course, St. Louis University. Give Tom a call. 352-588-2016. Minder, Lightning's home tomorrow night versus Ottawa. Home Saturday night versus Winnipeg. 813-301-6600. Escape to TampaBayLightning.com. Frank, have a blessed week, and I'll talk to you during the week, and have a great weekend. The kids a hug for me, Frank. Take it away,
okay,
sir.
Okay, I will. Good luck tomorrow. Ladies
Thank
and gentlemen,
you.
These programs are brought to you each and every week. Appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just take a second and say thank you. It means the world to all the guys. We also dedicate these programs to fallen officers, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Ricky Bell, Detective Randy Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, New Castle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Uniform Division, Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PD, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, and Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the rains fall softly on your field, and may you be... Got it all messed up here because of that. May you be in heaven before that devil knows you're there. And may the Lord keep, good Lord, keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night.
Shema. Shema lekma yelama. Shema he. Zahirma Sona Shene Vorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Irma
fiery blade and gates to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field.
County dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Good night, Bob. We miss you. Good night, Frank. We love you.
Good night.